Yeah, I think today we can really give a ribbish here. We'll try not to switch in the middle. We left off a couple of weeks ago. We were discussing the basic halacha in terms of either paying ribbish or collecting ribbish from a non-Jew. So just to put things back into perspective for a moment, min haTorah, clearly this is permissible. It's a pasuk in Chumash, anochi sashech. So you're allowed to give ribbish to a non-Jew. You're allowed to collect ribbish to a non-Jew. There are certain circumstances. There are problems with the Rabbanim, but we said that most of those problems with the Rabbanim probably don't apply because man hazeh. So basically, we're left with the din min haTorah that one is permitted to lend money to a non-Jew ribbish, one is permitted to collect money from a non-Jew ribbish. How exactly do you define someone who is non-Jewish? So obviously, if the person is really not Jewish, then there's nothing to talk about. We spoke a little bit in the previous year about the status of a mumar, an important shayla, a potential shayla of Bizman. If you have an individual who is technically Jewish, but they have really, really gone off of the path entirely, they're no longer practicing anything, are they considered to be Jewish for these purposes? And we pointed out that even though in other areas of halacha, we treat a mumar, someone who is, when I speak about a mumar, I mean a mumar of a zara, chashas perhesi, someone who's really, really off the path. So for other areas of halacha, we really treat him as being Jewish. It means he's mekadesh anisha, so the woman is mekadeshes. Or let's say if it's a woman who's a mumeres, she has a child, the child is considered to be a full-fledged Jew. So for other areas of halacha, we do consider the person to have full kedushas Israel. We wouldn't accept the shechita, we wouldn't want them to touch our wine, things of that nature, but basically they are considered to be Jewish. For the purposes of ribbis, many Rishonim say that one would be permitted to take ribbis from them. And the reason why one would be permitted to take ribbis from them is that the whole idea of ribbis is to support our fellow brethren. So we're not responsible to support those individuals who have totally, completely left the fold. So if somebody is a mumah l'kola tarakula, everyone would define that term precisely. So technically speaking, one would be permitted to collect ribbis from them. Nevertheless, the Shulchan Aruch quotes in Rishonim that even though one would be permitted to take ribbis from them, one would not be permitted to pay them ribbis. It's a strange halacha that I'm allowed to collect ribbis from them because I'm not responsible for them, but they're responsible for me. I didn't do anything wrong, so they still have a mitzvah of prohibition of taking ribbis from me. So you have a strange quirk that if you have a mumah l'avodizara, someone who's totally a mumah l'kola tarakula, so I'm allowed to collect ribbis from them, but I'm not allowed to give them ribbis. Lemaisa, this application doesn't really apply too much. The Rishonim say for a variety of reasons. First of all, not everyone agreed to the school in the first place. And number two, Bizman Hazeh, most of the mumrim, 99% of the mumrim today, are not really mumrim in the classic sense of the word. Most of them fall into what the Rambam's category of Tinuch Shenishbo are, and therefore none of this applies. So therefore, Lemaisa, we treat quote unquote mumrim Bizman Hazeh as regular Jews in terms of ribbis. So therefore, even if a person is not religious, one would be prohibited both from giving them ribbis as well as collecting from them ribbis. There is an interesting shayla that the Rishonim discussed, the Shulchan Aruch discussed, again, not all that relevant to Bizman Hazeh, but the Rishonim discussed the unique status of a kusi in halacha. Just in case anyone wants to go into a multi-million-dollar business deal with some Samaritan living in Shechem or something, so the Rishonim discussed what exactly is his status. So the Shulchan Aruch writes that a kusi has a status like a Yisrael Mumar, because they don't observe any of the mitzvahs, other things that they do, they don't observe the mitzvahs in the way that we observe them, where the Torah was given to Klal Yisrael. So they have a status like Mumrim, and therefore the Shulchan Aruch writes that you're permitted to collect ribbis from them, but you're not permitted to lend money ribbis to them. Same as the Yisrael Mumar. So the Shach and that, the Shulchan Aruch, in the very beginning of Hilchos Seribis, so the Shach jumps on that Shulchan Aruch, and the Shach says, wait a second, the Gemara says in Chulin that even though there was a Machlokes HaTanaim, where the Kusim were Jewish or not Jewish, that was in the earlier days. In the later generations, so the Chachamim were Keveya, that the Mamish didn't like Goyim. They didn't like Goyim L'chol Dover. So Bein L'Kulu, Bein L'Chum, the Shach says. So if a Kusi would be Mekadosh Anisha, the Shach says, the Kedusha would be Chal. They're Mamish not Jews. Bechal, they have no Kedush Yisrael anymore. I think in Israel, that's what they assume. That's what the government, they're not registered as Jews. They're registered as a separate ethnic group. They're registered as Samaritans. They're not the couple of thousand of them that exist today. I don't think that they're even secularly considered to be Jews. So the Shach says that they're Mamish not Dinuk Yisrael. They're Mamish Goyim Gemurim. So why does the Shulchan Aruch say you're not allowed to borrow money from ribbis from them? You should be mutter to borrow from them, ribbis, lend money from ribbis from them, etc. Okay, good. So next time someone comes with the Shaila, but a Kusi, it's Machagas, the Machab, and the Shach, what the Allah is. So again, so the basic Allah is that. Goyim are permitted to take or to give ribbis to. You saw Mumrim as a machlokes a Rishonim, but Bizman Hazeh, that's not all that relevant. Then you have these funny kinds of people who are not exactly sure what category to put them into. Those who are interested in terms of historically, there's a fascinating discussion at the beginning of Hilchos Ribbis that the Birchei Yosef has about the shayla that took place in the days of Bayis Rishon. So I think it's the Haftorah. It's the introduction of the Haftorah Parshas Vayera about the the person who the Pesuk of Melachim describe about the woman who comes crying to Elisha, right? It's the opening of Ayir, right before the story about the Isha HaShunamis. So about the woman who borrowed money and she couldn't pay back the debts, and now the king was going to come. They were going to come and take her son as an Evan, and she comes crying to Elisha, and she says that my husband died. Avdecha Yoris Hashem Me'od, that he was a tremendous tzaddik, he was a big Yirei Shemayim, her husband, and he got himself into debt, and he got himself into trouble, and da-da-da, but then Elisha helped her out. So who is this mysterious individual who she was referring to? Who is this husband who was not mentioned by name? So Chazal say this husband was none other than Ovadia. Because Ovadia Novi, the Ovadia was also appears in the beginning of Sefer in Sefer Melachim Aleph. Ovadia was the person who worked in Achav's house. He was Achav's right hand man. It was a very strange setup. Achav was a Rosh Marusha, Ovid of Adazara, Mamish, Machdis Arabim, and his right hand man, the guy in charge of his chishma pesef or something. He was a big tzaddik. He was a Navi. A very strange setup. So Ovadia was the Navi. He was a ger. The Gemara says, the Gemara comments absolutely, he was a ger, Ovadia. And the pasuk says in Sefer Melachim, "Hech biyasa Nevi Hashem." When Zevel killed all the Neviim, so Vajra hid a whole bunch of Neviim in a cave, 50 Neviim in one cave, 50. That's a pasuk before we should say Sefer Melachim. And who chukel some? The pasuk says that he provided for them. Where did he get the money to provide for them? So the Gemara says that he used to borrow money from the king. I guess he didn't tell Achav what he was borrowing money for. So he borrowed money from King Achav. And he would use that money to be fine us all the Nevi'im, who Izevel, Achav's wife, was trying to kill. Man, there's like a soap opera going on. There's a saga going on over here. So anyway, what happened? So Achav wasn't so frum. Besides being an Obed of Erezar, he was also a shrewd businessman. So he's lending money to Ovadia, lending money to Ribis, the whole story. So at the end, the Medrash says that Ovadia didn't actually borrow the money from Achav himself. He borrowed the money from Achav's son, Yehoram, I think was not mistaken. He's one of the, you have to look at Sefer Melachim, there are a lot of kings by the same names there. I think it was Yehoram, whatever it was. So he would borrow money for Ribis from Achav's son, and he would use it to support the Nevi'im. And then the problem was, then he died, and he had all the money that he still owed the king. So that's where the king went after his wife, went after his kids. That was the background to the story in Sefer Melachim. So Tosfos and Avodah Zarah really discusses the Shaila. What do you mean he borrowed money for Ribis? It's an issur of Ribis. So the Acharonim discussed whether this particular king was Jewish or not. The king who he was borrowing from, why wasn't he Jewish? Because his mother was Izevel. So Izevel was not Jewish. She was born not Jewish. She was from Chitim, whatever. She was a Goyish woman, wherever she was from. So the question, there was a whole discussion in the Birkei Yosef, and Yivuchas Ribis, did Izevel convert or not? Did she have a valid Geirus or not? So Mad Neshayla, her husband was an Ovid of Adazara. He was the king of Melech Yisrael. And the Birkei Yosef is having a football with a Taisus and Avodah Zarah, whether she was Megayer or not. My Nafka Mila, she was Megayer, whether her son was Jewish. And who cares whether her son was Jewish? We don't have any kings anymore from that. That Malchus of Achav was long bumped off. So why do we care whether her son was Jewish? No, because Ovadia was buying money beribis from him. So if he was not Jewish, then I understand why he was buying money beribis from him. If he was Jewish, so what gave Ovadia and Novi the right to buy money beribis? So believe it or not, there's a Taisus that talks about this cash. So Taisus says it was Pekuach Nefesh. Taisus says you had Nevi'im who were living in a cave. They had no money. They had no food. So Ovadia was the only source of cash for them. And the only way he can get some quick cash was to buy money for ribbons from this Yisrael Mumma. But a while, anyways, that was interesting. You take a look at this saga about this long in the Birkei Yosef to try to work out all the halachic details about that loan beribis that took place apparently between Ovadia Hanavi Hager and Yoram, the son of Achav, the son of Izevel, who may or may not have been Jewish. Anyway, just a tidbit of information. Anyway, getting back to our story in terms of halacha. So we have the basic rules in terms of who one is permitted to borrow ribbons from, who one is not permitted to borrow ribbons from. But now let's take some of these klalim one step further, assuming that we're working with a real full-fledged goy, someone who's a goy l'chol adei, is not Israel Mumma, not a kusi, not Izevel's son, someone who we mamish, we know, Mr. John Brown, someone who we know for sure is not Jewish l'chol adei. So I want to borrow money for ribbons from him, so no problem. I want to lend money for ribbons from him, absolutely no problem. But it can get a little bit complicated if you have a situation that starts to arise, which are some of those very fairly common questions, when it's not a straight-out loan from a Jew to a Goy or a Goy to a Jew, but there are sometimes three parties involved in the loan. So you can have three parties involved in the loan in different presentations. So let's take the simpler case first. Let's say, for argument's sake, I borrow money from a non-Jew. Reuven borrows money from Mr. Brown. So Reuven sets up a document for Ribbis, and he's going to pay off Mr. Brown X amount of money. Good shot at the Gomer. So in the middle of all this loan is still intact between Reuven and Mr. Brown, so Shimon comes over to Reuven, and Shimon says, that money that you borrowed from Mr. Brown, I see you pretty much finished your use of that money now. I know that you're going to go next week to go pay off Mr. Brown the money. He's a little bit low on funds. He's got to buy a lot of chametz. So you're going to pay off Mr. Brown fairly soon. So you know what? I'd like to borrow some money from you. I'll borrow that money that you owe Mr. Brown. Let me borrow that money. And guess what? I'll pay you the same rate that you're paying Mr. Brown. So, why should we call Mr. Brown? He's got to come and fly in again to go set up another document and set up another deal and start all over again. I'll make it easy for everybody. So I'll take that same money and I'll pay you and then you'll pay him. Inshallah, Yisrael. So the Gemara says, that's Ribbis Gemurah. That's Ribbis Mamash Ribbis Diraisa. Because you can't just circumvent the middle Jew. The middle Jew, the first person, the first lover, still owes the money to Mr. Brown. So he owes $1,000 plus ribbis to Mr. Brown. And now the new lover, Shimon, owes Reuven $1,000 plus ribbis. So you can't just say we're going to remove the middle person and we've just created a new loan. What kind of new loan? The loan between Mr. Brown and the first Jew is still intact. So then there's a new loan between the first Jew and the second Jew. So that new loan is beribbis. That's mamash ribbis, ribbis gemurah mederais, the Gemara says. So Tosfos raises the following question. What if we make it a little bit easier, a little bit better? That comes the second Jew, comes Shimon to Reuven and says, you know what? I'm going to take that loan over for you and I'll pay Mr. Brown directly. I said, I'll leave you even out of the picture. You just forward me the $1,000 and I'll pay at the end of the loan, a month from now, I'll send a check for $1,000 plus $100 of ribbis to Mr. Brown. So that sounds like it should be okay. So it sounds like the middle Jew has been bypassed. So the first Jew has been bypassed. So it sounds like there's a new loan taking place between Mr. Brown and the new Jew. So Tosfos says, absolutely not. Tosfos says, that's still ribbis d'araisa. Even though there's no money that's going from one Jew to another, the money is going from a Jew to a guy. The first Jew is mamash out of the picture. It doesn't matter, says Tosfos. That's still considered to be two separate loans that exist. There's one loan from Mr. Brown to Reuven, then there's a separate loan from Reuven to Shimon, and Shimon really should be paying Reuven the ribbis. What's he doing? He's doing Reuven a favor. Instead of paying Reuven the money into his hands, Reuven has told Shimon, in effect, take that money and pay it off to a third person. So if you remember, we spoke about this in the weeks, months ago, about ribbis ayudei achet, ribbis of arev. Let's say, simple case, I borrow $1,000 from you, and we make the following deal. I borrow $1,000, I'll pay you back $1,000, and I'll give $100 to tzedakah. So that Tosfos says is ribbis d'araisa, because if I make an agreement with you that I'm going to give X amount of money, in a sense, on your behalf, I'm going to pay off something for you, either something that you owe or something that you want to give. So that $100 that I'm giving to tzedakah, that basically is as if I'm giving it to you. That's the halacha. That since I'm giving to tzedakah based on the deal that I entered into with you, that's tantamount of the halacha to putting it mamash into your pocket. So comes Tosfos and says that even though there's no money that's literally physically transferring hands, there's no ribbis that's transferring hands from the second Jew to the first Jew, but since that loan is still exists between the first Jew and the second Jew, and the second Jew is giving the ribbis money back to the goy b'tzivoy ha'yisrael harishon, that's mamash ribbis d'araisa. So that could be a real problem of ribbis d'araisa. How would one possibly set up such a case to avoid this? So the Gemara says the only way to get rid of this problem, the Gemara, the fifth problem of Metzia says, is that you have to break up the original relationship. You have to start mamish everything from scratch. You can't have two different loans going on. You have to create a new kesher, a new relationship between the new lover, between Shimon and the original guy. So you can do that. So as long as Mr. Brown and the first lover, they're friends. They say, listen, Mr. Brown says to the first lover, to Reuven, listen, I have no shaykes you anymore. Your loan is over. Your loan is finished. Kaput. I don't want to see you anymore. I'm done. Now, Mr. Brown says, do me a favor. Go ahead and be my quote-unquote shaliach. Go ahead and lend that money to the second Jew and collect the ribbis on my behalf. That's okay. That's not a problem. I could borrow money. Let's say I have a non-Jewish bank, for argument's sake, and the teller in the bank happens to be a Jewish fellow. That's not a problem. The Jew is working on behalf of the goy, so that's not ribbis at all. So as long as there's no loan that's taking place between the first Jew and the second Jew, so that's not a problem. As long as the first loan is overbought, the first loan was paid back already, the first loan was nimchal already, and now there's a second loan that's being set up, but it's not being set up between the two Jews, it's being set up between the Jew and the goy, that's perfectly mutter. That's mutter l'chatchila.
What about the case where the original loan is taken, let's say case, first guy, Shimon didn't have credit. He gets Reuven to take from the guy the money to give to him, and he pays it back to the guy.
So who's borrowing from Reuven? So Reuven is
from the guy.
Reuven's borrowing money from the guy.
On behalf of Shimon. Shimon gave Shimon the money.
So Reuven is serving as an RA for their loan?
Well,
we're going to talk about that. We're going to get to Arv. Arv makes things even more. In case this wasn't complicated enough, Arv makes things even more complicated. Okay, so here there's no Arv. Here it's Mamash just straight out the agent. He's Mamash just working. The first Jew is just working for the guy, and he's just handing the money over to Shimon. But there's no debt that's taking place in Reuven and Shimon, so that's perfectly okay. What if just flip everybody around? What if you have the following situation? What if a Jew lends money to a guy? So let's say Reuven is the Malva. Reuven lends money to Mr. Brown. So Mr. Brown owes Reuven $1,000 plus rivers. Now Shimon comes to Mr. Brown, and Shimon says, I'd like to borrow money from you, and I'll give you that same rate that you were giving Reuven. So that's perfectly okay, because since that money is still under the shlita of Mr. Brown, he's the one who's responsible for that cash right now, so the original Malveh Reuven, the original Jewish lender, is out of the picture right now. So Mr. Brown is taking money that he originally borrowed $1,000 to use for his business. Now he's lending that money off to a Jew to use for his business. So that's okay. That's a loan between a guy and a Jew. So that's perfectly okay. Perfectly okay, min haTorah. That doesn't seem to be any problem in haTorah. Nevertheless, the Gemara raises the following Shiloh.
That's not the case if he tells him the second one is going to pay back Reuven. Shimon's not going to pay back Reuven.
Shimon is not paying. Shimon could pay back Reuven also, because there's no debt between Reuven and Shimon. The debt is between Mr. Brown and Shimon, so that's okay. So Shimon can do whatever he wants. He can pay Mr. Brown, he can pay Mr. Brown's makabel. But comes the Gemara of Metzia and says, sometimes this could look problematic. Why could this look problematic? Let's see, if everybody's standing here together, you have Maim Shloshin, you have three guys standing together. You have Reuven, who originally lent the money to Mr. Brown. You have Mr. Brown, who's now taking his own borrowed money, in a sense, and giving it over to Shimon. So min haTorah, everything's fine. This is a loan. There was a loan between between Reuven to Mr. Brown, and there was a loan from Mr. Brown to Shimon. So everything looks fine min haTorah. But says the Gemara that all three standing there together. So to the person who's looking at this picture, what does it really look like? It looks like a joke. It really looks like Reuven is lending money to Shimon through Mr. Brown. Mr. Brown serving as the quote-unquote shaliach. He's serving as the agent for a deal that's setting up a ribbis. So this doesn't look right. So comes the Gemara and says, what do you mean he's serving as the agent? We have a rule in Hilchos Shlichas, we know, when Kedusha, the second Berak, ain't shlichas la'achom. A non-Jew cannot serve as a shaliach for a Jew. Let's say, for example, if I appoint another Jew to separate truma for me, so that's okay. That's perfectly all right. I can be mafresh truma myself, or I can be mafresh truma a shaliach. A Jew can appoint me, I can appoint another Jew. That's the Chiddush HaTorah. Hatem gam hatem. The Torah says in Parshas Korach, you have to be mafresh truma, kein tamrimu gam hatem truma sashem. So the Gemara in Kedushin says, what does it mean gam hatem? Gam comes, the rabbis of shluchachem. This comes to include even a shaliach can be mafresh truma. So it comes to the Gemara and says, since the Torah includes the phrase of shaliach in the same phrase as you being mafresh truma, there has to be a comparison between the shaliach and the mishalach. Just as the Mishalech is Jewish, so to the Shaliach has to be Jewish. So they have to be on the same team, the Mishalech and the Shaliach. You can't have a Jew appointing a Goy as a Shaliach. You can't have a Goy appointing a Jew as a Shaliach. It's a big Machlekes Acharonim. It's funny, Machlekes, it appears in Hilchos Chametz. Machlekes the Maaseh Binyamin and the Magen Avraham. Can a Goy appoint another Goy as a Shaliach? Because the Gemara says the whole reason why a Jew can't appoint a Goy is because the Jew and the Goy have to be on the same team. Kein tamimu gam atem, ma atem b'nei bris, ashlucham b'nei bris. So a Jew can't appoint a Goy, and a Goy can't appoint a Jew. What about a Goy appointing a Goy? So the Magen Avraham quotes from one of the early Achron, the Maaseh Binyamin, says that's okay. It's not a halacha that a Goy can't be a Shaliach. Not that a Goy can't be a Mishalech. A Goy can't be a Shaliach for a Jew, but one Goy for another Goy, 100%, no problem. And the Bungan of Ram says, no, what are you talking about? That halacha of Atem Gram Atem means that Goyim are out of the parasha of Shlichus. Shlichus is the Chiddush HaTorah, and Goyim are moving from Shlichus. You can't have a Goy being a Shlich for a Goy, for a Jew for a Goy, nothing. My Nafkamina, what are they talking about? They're talking about Hochas Chametz. It's a Bungan of Ram about Mechiras Chametz. The Bungan of Ram raises the question, what would that halacha be if I want to sell my chametz to a guy, and the guy's busy, so he doesn't want to come to the sale right now, he sends a shaliach to represent him. So would that be okay? The particular shliach who's coming isn't interested in buying the chametz. He doesn't have the money to buy the chametz. He's the agent for the big boss. So can he serve as a shliach for the guy? So the master of the Yom said, why not? Yesh shliach is the Akum, ben Akum the Akum. So the Magen Avraham says, chas v'shalom. He says, that mechiras chametz is bottled in the Torah. He says, there's no shlichus. He has no authority to buy the chametz. If he wants to buy the chametz for himself, that he could do. But he's not interested. He doesn't want to get him to a $1 million deal. He's coming as a representative, as a worker, as an agent for the first guy. So there's no shlichus between two goyim. So it's interesting application of this machlokes from a little past in Yom Yom. But the Chopanim, everybody agrees that between Jews and goyim, there's no shlichus. That's it. Finished. I can't appoint a goy as a shlich, and a goy can't appoint me as a shlich. That's why we have a problem. I spoke about this once in shul. That's why there's an issue in one of the stores in Tinuk in Big Apple Farm. So Big Apple Farm is owned by non-Jews. So we won't let them buy produce from Eretz Yisrael. Because when you buy products from Eretz Yisrael, you have to be mafresh rumus and maizus. So in other stores, the mashkiach is mafresh rumus and maizus. But over here, if the product is going to be bought by Big Apple Farm, it's going to be owned by non-Jews. So technically speaking, the only person who can be mafresh that rumus and maizus is the non-Jew themselves. So a goy can be mafresh trumas and maizus. Believe it or not, a goy has the koch, the gemara, the chalik, we pass a trumas akam is truma, that a goy can be mafresh trumas and maizus, but he cannot appoint the mashiach to do it on his behalf, because ain't shlichus la'acham. So it's going to be a little bit of a tricky situation. We're going to have to explain in other languages exactly how to be mafresh trumas and maizus. We're a little bit nervous about setting up that situation of having the non-Jew be mafresh trumas and maizus. So we not for any political reasons, just for practical halakhic reasons, we don't let them buy Israeli products in that particular store. Anyway, getting back to the story. So min haTorah, there's no problem of shlichus. So min haTorah, when you have these three guys standing together, so you have Reuven, Mr. Brown, and Shimon. So we don't view this as a loan between Reuven and Shimon. We view this as a loan between Mr. Brown and Shimon. So it should be at the Gemara. So the Gemara says, you're right. But maybe yesh shlichus l'akom l'chumra. Maybe it's a pastish. It doesn't look right. Maybe it looks like a shlichus. People are going to walk away and say, this is a big joke. This looks like there's a shlichus over here. And maybe we should say yesh shlichus l'akom l'chumra. So that's a statement that appears in the Gemara. So there's a machlekes of Rishonim, Rashi and Tosfos, whether that halacha really stands. Whether, depending on how you read it, it's a somewhat complicated sugya nezuneshech, whether that Chumra actually stands l'maskana. So Rashi claims that it does. Rashi says that we paskin halacha yesh shlichus l'chumra l'akum, and therefore one has to be careful about such a setup. So if all three parties are standing together, that could smack of ribis midi rabbanan. And Rabbeinu Tam says no. At the end of the sugi, that whole chumra falls by the wayside. It's mamish mutter l'chatchila, even midi rabbanan. It's mutter. So that's the further question. Is that really called? There are two issues about that. There. Yesh shlichus l'dvar becomes a shaila, whether that even applies when you're dealing with a goy in the first place. And number two, whether yesh shlichus l'dvar aveira cancels the shlichus, or whether it just pots the guy from an onesh. So it may not help. Anyway, at the end of the day, it's machlokes Rashi and Rabbeinu Tam. So the Ramah writes in Hilchos Ribbis that this was a common practice in Poland in the 1500s in Krakow. This is a common story. I know common is maybe this today also, but in Krakow this was a big issue. So the Ramah writes that there were many people who were making the shaila, that they used to rely on Rabbeinu Tam. They would have these kinds of setups that Jews lending money to goyim, goyim lending money to Jews. As long as men at Torah, you were clear, and they weren't so concerned about this chumra midrabban. So the Ramah writes, he doesn't really think it's right. He thinks Rabbeinu Tam was a das yochid, and we really shouldn't rely on this. He says, those who rely on it, okay, cool. Yesh tam milismoch, but the chetchila one shouldn't rely on this. The chetchila one should follow Shittas Rashi, and one shouldn't have these kinds of setups when there's a goy in the middle. The Gemara in the fifth parak, also in Bava Metzia, speaks very, very strongly about people who set up ribbis kinds of contracts, quote unquote, using goyim in the middle, to make it look like it's okay. So this particular case really is okay, min haTorah. But sometimes the Gemara has what's called tolama osa biat akum. It means Reuven really wants to lend money to Shimon Baribis. So Reuven comes to Shimon and he says, yeah, don't worry, these are Gersha funds, these are not really my funds. But in his heart of heart, they really are his funds. So the Gemara says, that's a terrible thing. That's called tolama osa biat akum, and that's mamash and isa diraisa. So the Gemara says in Ezu Neshech, that's why the Torah writes, in the parish of Ribbis, Ani Hashem Lokechem Shotzeis Yeschem Eretz Mitzrayim. The parish is Bahar. A couple of weeks from now, so the Torah gives us the dinim of Ribbis Be'arichos, and the Torah says, you better be careful about Ribbis, because I think you're out of Mitzrayim. So the Gemara says, Ma Inyan Yitzias Mitzrayim to Ribbis. Shabbos, we understand Yitzias Mitzrayim. Pesach, we understand. Sukkos, we understand. What does Ribbis have to do with Yitzias Mitzrayim? So the Gemara says, what it means is like this, that at the time of Yitzias Mitzrayim, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't play any tricks. It's HaKadosh Baruch Hu picked who the Bechor was and who wasn't the Bechor. And Gemara says, Ani hivchanti ben tipesh ha-Bechor l'tipesh ein ha-Bechor. Nobody else knew who exactly was the Bechor, and I knew exactly. This woman was Mazana, that woman was Mazana, this was the Bechor, not the Bechor. So Ani hivchanti ben misha Bechor misha ein ha-Bechor. So when you go ahead and you try to pull tricks on the Ribbono Shel Olam, you think you can outsmart me? So he says, I'm telling you, you can't. Ani Hashem l'kecha b'shotzeis ischem Eretz Mitzrayim. So the Gemara says in Bav Metzia that there are certain mitzvahs that the Torah speaks about Yitzias Mitzrayim, which intrinsically have nothing to do with Yitzias Mitzrayim. But the reason why the Torah emphasizes Yitzias Mitzrayim with these mitzvahs is because certain mitzvahs are susceptible to trickery. So whenever you have a mitzvah that a person can be mezayif, he thinks he's pulling a wool over HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu emphasizes, Ani Hashem Lakechem, you can't pull anything off me, Ani Hashem Lakechem, Ani Yivchanti Ben Tipash HaBukhor, Ani Tipash HaBukhor. So the three mitzvahs that the Gemara singles out above Metziah are, one is ribbis, the other is tzitzis, and the other is mishkolos. The Gemara says, if you trick a guy with weights and measures, so the guy pulls a kuntzim, he plays with the scale, so he figures, who knows, nobody knows that I'm playing with the scales. So Ani Hashem Lakechem Shatzeis Yischem Eretz Mitzrayim. I know exactly, you're fudging the books, I know exactly what you're doing. Ani Hashem Lakechem Shatzeis Yischem Eretz Mitzrayim. Then the Gemara says it about tzitzis as well. The Gemara says that if a person uses the non-authentic tcheles, a person uses the fake tcheles, what the Gemara calls the kala ilan, it was much cheaper kala ilan. So the person doesn't want to spend so much money to buy real tcheles, so he buys the cheap imitation. Nobody knows the difference. So the Gemara says, "Yitach, all right, you can't tell to the naked eye, you can't tell the difference, but a Kadosh Baruch Hu knows the difference. So Ani Hashem Lakechem, Ani Yivchanti Ben Tipel Bechor, Tipel Shein Bechor. So I'm going to be pareah from those people who are trying to pull something over me. So you see, interesting with this Gemara that these mitzvahs, they're big aveiras. Taking ribbis is a big aveira. It's cheating in business is a big aveira. Not wearing authentic tcheles, what's such a terrible aveira? Not wearing authentic tcheles. You yaitz the mitzvah anyway. Even if lo yitzu the tcheles is posel tcheles, it's no worse than white strings. So you're still yaitz the mitzvah. We pass in tcheles as dam akib. So what's so terrible? So at a somewhat humorous / embarrassing story about this gemara, that was back about 10 years ago. So I was speaking in a shul in California, like a scholar in residence. It was right before Tisha B'Av, if I'm not mistaken. So I was speaking about the inyanim of rebuilding the Beis Hamikdash. So I started talking about Bigdei Kohuna of Bismana Zera. So I started to speak a little bit about Tcheles. So I said about, many people claim there is Tcheles with Bismana Zera. So Machlekes, maybe according to those who hold there is, you can make Bigdei Kohuna. So I started to talk about that a little bit. So not knowing that I had just given that shiur like 10 minutes before, so Rabbi Osben Shlit, the Rashiv of Tells in Riverdale, I know very, very well for many, many years. So he spoke like between Min Chamayev in that same shul, but he had no clue that I had spoken. Had no clue what I had spoke about. So he spoke about this Gemara. Mamish just out of the blue. He spoke about this Gemara, about Ani Hashem Lakechem Shatzeis Yischem Eretz Mitzrayim. So he said that what's so terrible about the guy who wears the pasul tcheles? So he said, what's terrible is that it's sheker. It's not so terrible. The mitzvah itself is not so terrible. What's so terrible? So you weren't yotzei tcheles. Big deal. None of us are yotzei tcheles. Many of us are not yotzei tcheles. He yotzei the mitzvah anyway. He said, but the problem is that ziyaf haTorah, that you're making sheker, you're taking the Dvar Hashem, and you're falsifying the word of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and you're an imposter, and that's what the chait is. So here, everyone was like looking to me and says, did he just mean to say that your tcheles is, the Efrat tcheles is a ziyaf haTorah? I said, he didn't mean to say anything. He had no idea what I was talking about. He wasn't responding to my shiur, so some people had some issues. He said, no, we go back many years. He had nothing bad to say about it. Maybe he liked my shiur, he didn't like my shiur. Maybe he likes the tcheles, doesn't like tcheles, but that wasn't what his topic of his shiur was about. Anyway, so you have to always clear with who speaks before and who speaks after you. But anyway, get back to the story. So the Gemara says that you can have sometimes a terrible situation with Tolem Osav Yerakom, that a guy's mamash is really an imposter. The guy's really falsifying the Torah and trying to trick HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So that's a terrible thing. So this is not that. This case that the Gemara is talking about is not that, because this is Min HaTorah really mutter. This is not really shlichus, because Min HaTorah really is no shlichus for a Tino Goy and a Jew. But according to Rashi and most of the Rishonim, this doesn't look right either. So therefore, Midir Rabbanan, we prohibit it. So again, unless one lives in Krakow in the 1500s, has a specific minhag to be matter this, most of the poskim say one should try to avoid this type of a setup. So these are the, believe it or not, the more straightforward cases of having Jews and Goyim involved in ribbis transactions. Then it gets a little bit more complicated, which becomes very, very relevant for us, Lemaisa. And that's once we introduce into the picture what's called an arev. We introduce a cosigner into the deal. So the very last mission, the very end of the second last mission, the end of Bava Basra, speaks about an institution that's called an arev. So a very simple concept that I'm ready to lend you $1,000. The only thing is I don't like your credit so well, so I ask you to bring me somebody who's going to cosign the loan. So that's called an arev. So the Gemara says that's a binding principle in the Torah. You have such a concept that if a person cosigns a loan, he agrees, either b'shtav, whatever the details of arev, he agrees to pay back the loan if the other guy defaults. So that's binding min haTorah. The Gemara actually learns this out from Sukkim, or tries to learn it out from Sukkim, whatever it is. The Gemara says, Lamai, so this is the din min haTorah, that Arev is mishtabit. One of the Makaras the Gemara tries to learn it from is from Yehuda, Anochi Arvenu, Miyadi Tevakshenu. So you see, there's a concept of Arev. So the Gemara discusses, is that really a good muffin? It's not really Arev, like we know of Arev, like Gemara quotes on the Pesuk, whatever it is. The Gemara dug up some kind of a pasuk, some kind of a muffin, there's a concept of Arev. So in order to understand how Arev plays out in terms of Jews and Goyim, we just need a little bit of a background in terms of Hilchos Arev. There were three types of Arev in Halacha. The Gemara spells out the three different types of setups in terms of Arev. There's one type of Arev which the Gemara calls an Arev Shlofdots. Shlofdots apparently is some Persian word or something. The Rishonim try very hard to figure out what the etymology of that word is. Machlekes Rishonim, where exactly it comes from. But that's what the Gemara calls an Arev Shlofdots. So what does an Arev Shlofdots mean? Arev Shlofdots means that the Arev Mamash becomes, in effect, the borrower. It means I'm willing to lend Reuven $1,000, but I'm looking at Reuven's credit rating, so I'm not so impressed with him. So I say, okay, listen, Reuven, bring me Shimon, and Shimon should co-sign this loan. But I'm telling you like this, when it comes time to collect the loan, I'm going right after Shimon. I don't even want to hear about Reuven. I don't trust Reuven. I don't know Reuven. I'm going to go straight to Shimon. He's going to be the first person I'm going to be Teveh for the Chov. That's called an Arev Shloftotz. Then you have an Arev, what's called an Arev Kablon. Arev Kablon is not quite as serious an obligation as the Arev Shloftotz. An Arev Kablon means that I reserve the right to collect from whoever I want. Means I can go after the original, I can go after the Lov, I can go after Reuven, go after Shimon, whoever I want, I have a right to collect from whoever I want. And then the Gemara says you have what's called an Arev Stam. An Arev Stam is what the Mishnah says in Bava Basra, lo yifra min ha'arev t'chila. It means it's understood that when the person is co-signing the loan, so I'm not going to go after the co-signer unless I'm really stuck. I'm going to go l'chet chila after the lova. I'm going to take long, I'm going to go to court and go after the lova. If the lova skips town, the lova runs out of money, the lova goes bankrupt, I can't get my money from the lova, so then nebuch, I fall back on the arev. That's what's called an arev stam. So three different levels of Kabbalah's arvos, and it will depend upon what the agreement is. So there's no mitzvah to go into one way or the other. There's no issi. Do whatever you want. So if I want to lend money, $1,000 to a Jew, no ribbis involved. Regular. I'll lend you $1,000 to pay me back $1,000. I don't trust you're going to pay me back. So I bring an Arev into the picture. So I can choose whatever setup I want. I want an Arev Shlovdots. I want more. I trust the Arev better. I'll go for the Arev Shlovdots route. If I equally trust or distrust both of you, I'll go to Arev Kablon. And if I really just want to go after the Lov, and I think he'll probably pay me back, so then I'll go to Arev Stam. So again, three different levels. One can do whatever one wants, as long as there's no ribbis money being transferred around. But now the Shaila becomes complicated in the following situation. Let's say a Jew comes to borrow money from a Goy. Classic situation. Because money is all the time. A guy goes to borrow money from the bank. So we said already in the past that we treat our banks as basically being goyim. We treat them as quote unquote like corporations, and even though there may be some Jewish partners in the bank, but the overwhelming majority are non-Jews. So most of the poskim assume that our non-Jew regular. I don't know which banks are still around these days. Chase, okay. So regular, whatever bank is still functioning, so those banks are considered to be non-Jewish banks. Obviously, the Jewish banks are much more of a problem. We spoke about that, right? We spoke about that in the early shiur, about the status of the Israeli banks. But if you have a regular Goyish bank, you want to borrow money, want to take out a $100,000 loan from a bank, so that's a Jew borrowing money from a Goy. Very nice. Perfectly mutter. Now comes as follows. I come to the non-Jewish bank, or I come to the non-Jewish private person who's going to finance, give me this loan. I come there and say, I'd like to borrow $100,000 from you. So the guy says, 100%, good, we'll give it to you at, whatever percent interest, I don't know. 5%, 10%, I don't know. I'm not holding in these things. Whatever percent of interest is. So sure. Then the bank looks me over a little bit. They check my credit. And they say, Rabbi, we're a little nervous about this loan. We'd like you to come bring in somebody who's going to co-sign this loan. So I go bring in my father, my brother, my cousin, my friend, my partner. I bring in somebody to come and co-sign the loan. So far, so good. What could possibly be wrong? I'm borrowing money from the guy, and the Jew is co-signing the loan for me. So he's borrowing money from the guy. What? I'm borrowing money for the guy. He's borrowing money for the guy. What could possibly be wrong? Says the Gemara. Not so simple. Comes the Gemara and says, sometimes the halacha views this kind of a setup when you have three parties as no longer the guy lending me money, but rather the guy lending the Arev money, and now the Arev lending me money. We just created a triangle over here, and this triangle is going to be very problematic. We now view this as the guy is lending the Arev money, the Arev is lending me money, and if the guy goes and collects from the Arev, so now eventually the Arev is going to come and collect from me. When the Arev comes and collects from me, I'm going to be paying off ribbis to the Arev. So that's a very, very serious problem. So comes the Gemara and says, that could sometimes be ribbis deraisa. Sometimes yes and sometimes no. When is it ribbis and when is it not ribbis? The Gemara says it's a very dachastik achiluk. It's a very fine line. It all depends on how you view what's going on. Do we view this as if the bank's lending the money to me? Or do we view it as if the bank's lending the money to the Arev and the Arev in turn is lending it to me? So the Gemara says it depends. So if it's an Arev shlof dotes, if it's a type of a relationship where the bank says, listen, Rabbi, I'm not going to go after you altogether. I don't want to hear from you. I'm going after the Arev. So then if the bank makes a deal and says that I'm going after the Arev, or the individual guy says, I'm going after the Arev, so then the bank is saying, I'm lending money to the Arev. When the Arev pays back the money, he's going to come and collect the money beribis from me, so that's a problem. So if the setup is a case of an Arev shloftot types of a setup, so then how can you close your eyes to what's going on? Of course it's the bank lending money to the Arev, and the Arev's lending money to the Jew, so there's ribis that's transferring between the Jew and the Arev. However, if it's an Arev stam, where the bank is not lending any money to the Arev, the bank says, because you're going to go after the Arev, and it's once in the 10,000 years, I'll go after the Arev. If all else fails, I'll go after the Arev. So then the halacha is, the bank is lending money to the Jew, lending money to the first Jew. There's no loan there's no double loan that's taking place. So then it's perfectly okay. So the Gemara draws that distinction. If it's an Arev shloftos, then it's mamish ribis deraisa. If it's an Arev stam, then it's mamish mutter. What's the case? A question. The case is Arev Kaplan. What's the status of Arev Kaplan? Arev Kaplan is a tricky situation because the bank reserves the right to go either to the Arev or to the original borrower. So maybe we should view that similar to Arev Shlovdos. Maybe we should view that similar to Arev Stam. My nafkamina, whether it's Ribbis Deraisa or not. So that's a big machlekes Rishonim. So most of the Rishonim are machmin the Shaila. The Rashba's making machlekes Rishonim in Bav Metzia. The Rashba's making the Shaila. Most of the Rishonim depends on how to read the end of the Gemara in Bav Metzia. It's a complicated sugi in the end of Ezer Neshach. So most of the Rishonim are machmin the Shaila. According to most of the Rishonim, you have a kind of a setup where it's an Arev, even though it's not an Arev Shloftot, it's an Arev Kablon, where the bank or the original guy has the right to go to either one. We must view this as a potential double loan going on, which is problematic in terms of ribbis. This setup, this middle case, based on what I am told, is the way many of the Arevs are set up as manazet. Those who are more in the business can tell me, but I'm under the impression that when you have a person co-signs a loan today, so what, the bank has the right to go after either one, am I correct? The bank, they're not mechuif to go after the loaf, the original loaf, am I right? Right?
Depends what the... Because, like, for example, some student loans, they have it after 24 months, that the co-signer is not no longer responsible at all.
Yeah, but for the first 24 months, he is responsible. But the question is, what does that mean, responsible? So, again, this is what... Based on what I understand is that there are many agreements that are set up where the bank has the right to go to either one. They have nothing stopping them from going after the bank. Maybe they'll try to go after the lover first, but nothing's forcing them to go. Legally, they have the right to go after the Arev first. An Arev stam that's mutter in the Gemara means that the bank doesn't have a right to go after the Lova and to go after the Arev unless they've gone after the Lova, they've tried the hardest, they've taken the guy to Dintur, they come after him, and they still can't get the money, then and only then they're allowed to go to the Arev. I don't think those setups exist, I don't know enough about the business angle, but Lu Yitzu, you would have a regular type of an agreement where the bank has the equal right to go after one person or the other, that would be problematic. If that's the case, so then, let's say, a very common case. A guy wants to borrow $100,000 from the bank, he's starting a business, and he wants to bring his cousin, he wants to bring his brother in to co-sign the loan. That's a problem. That's a problem of ribbis. For one Jew to co-sign another Jew's loan would be a very, very serious problem of ribbis. Maybe according to the Rashba, but most of the Rishonim hold that would be a problem. So what would you have to do? The only way to get around this problem would be you would have to create a heteriska, which we haven't even spoken about yet, between the two Jews. Because anytime you can have some kind of a loan that's passing with ribbis problems, loans. The only way to circumvent that is to rephrase it as being a loan. Rather than being a loan, rather it's a business partnership that the Lova and the Arif are now entering into. So again, we'll get to Mitzvah in a week or two, the details of Atariska. We'll have to come back to this. But L'chaura, one should be careful not to co-sign loans under these types of circumstances.
It's $1 million, but the cosigner ends up paying. He's still on coming after this.
Right. So if the cosigner ended up paying, then it turns out that the cosigner paid all the ribbis to the bank. So at that point, it's as if he's lending money to the lova. At that point, he's already lending the ribbis money also. So it's as if the cosigner is lending 5,000 plus 1,000 of ribbis. And now, so he laid out 6,000. He's collecting 6,000. That the Jew, that's okay. The problem with ribbis is, I lay out 5,000, I get 6,000. That's the problem. So here, the cosigner of Bishaz Meis laid out 6,000. He's getting back 6,000. So that will be all right.
You're able to live it up at different time around. That's okay. Also,
the what? If you could, I think that would be all right. I think I've taken a look. I think that would be okay. So the post came on Ma'orer that you have these kinds of problems even if you don't have a technical cosigner. If you have two people that take out a loan together, if you take out a partnership, two partners take out a loan together, that could also be a problem of ribbis. Because again, this is based on what the information that's being presented to me was, is that when you take out a loan in partnership, so each person becomes, in a sense, a co-signer on the other half of the loan. So I'm responsible for 50% of the loan, you're responsible for 50%, but the bank can go after me on your half, then go after you on my half. So it turns out that I'm an Arif on your loan also. So it's vital a problem. So if two guys take out a loan together, they can also be problematic. So the exception to this rule is perhaps the most common situation when you take out a mortgage. So if you have, according to everything that I'm saying, if you have two people who are taking out a mortgage together, two guys are buying a house together, so they're taking out, it's all the time, parents and children, brother, hey, a lot of people do this. They buy a house together, they take a mortgage, the mortgage is in two different Jews' names, so maybe we should plug this into the problem. We should say, wait a second, there's a problem with ribbis, because each person is co-signing, in a sense, the other loan. So here the folks give a makel, a mortgage loans for the following reasons. That mortgage loans, so...
Wow.
Mortgage loans, they're not going after the person. They're going after the house. They're going to foreclose on the house. So the loan is not, we don't view it as the bank is coming after the arv. The whole reason why there was a problem with these arvus and loans is because we view it that the bank is going after the arv and the arv is coming after me. So there are two loans that are taking place. Here, there's one loan. Reuven and Shimon are taking out a bank loan together, are taking out a mortgage together from the bank, and the bank is saying, listen, I'm not going to go after either of you. I'm going after the house. So that's a different setup. That's a different setup with Gamre. So breathe a sigh of relief in that. So I think that's okay. That was still all right. No, you think it's not true? It's very rare to go after the person. They still foreclose. Baruch Hashem, they still foreclose houses. That's still matter us to have mortgages. Okay, I'm taking your word for it. That's still okay. So anyway, good. So co-signing loans is problematic. Potentially problematic. Taking joint loans is potentially problematic. Again, hit the risk is in there. The only thing we're able to fetch out of Kulu is for the joint mortgages. So we hope you're right. We should remain right. No one should take anyone's houses away. But at least I'll be dinner. That's the route that they're going. So then, lechar, it still remains mutter to take out a joint loan in terms of a mortgage payment. Okay, we'll stop.